Okay, so the last time I was talking about how to find a mixed strategy Nash equilibrium. Okay, and so I did the example of this matching penny game where the payoff matrices look like this. I'm just going through it again because I'm going to talk about this other way of doing it. And there were some questions at the end of last time that by sort of expounding again, it's sort of going to hopefully clarify the remarks. Okay, all right, so we did this, and then we wrote down the payoffs. So the payoffs to, okay, and then we said x, let player 1 play x1 is equal to probability, and we'll do heads, tails. The probability that player 1 plays heads. Okay, and h2 is the probability, x2, that player 2 plays heads. Okay, so then in terms of the x's, again, and these are guys doing randomized strategies, the utilities, or the payoffs, which are the same in what I'm going to say, U2 is just equal to minus U1. Okay. Okay, and then again, the Nash equilibrium was that you can't do better. So you say du1 dx1 equals 0, and that is 4x2 minus 2 is equal to 0, and du2 the x2 is equal to 0, and that implies 4x1 plus 2 equals 0. Okay, so, and it was pointed out, one of the questions was, they said, oh, well, but this is a condition on u1, and you end up with an equation for x2, and this is a condition on u2, and you ended up with an equation for x1, and isn't that weird? Okay. And yes, and not only that, but the structure of equations guarantee that that will always happen, okay? Just because, again, the payoffs, if I have more strategies, let's just stick with two-player games for the moment, but if I have more strategies, then, you know, I have player one, I have probabilities for everything that player one does and probabilities that player two does, and I also have, you know, and then I can also make I can make also more players, but the point is that see these are just you know what's the fraction of the players doing whatever. So it will always be the thing depends on the fraction of the player that you know the fraction of the time the nth player plays the jace strategy. So it will always come in again these x's there could be you know more x's and there can be x's and y's and z's and whatever. But each one only comes in once, and so just in general it will turn out that it will fall out of the equation. Okay, so it's general, and it always happens like this, and it's a little non-intuitive, and but then also it's a thing which is I've decided it's useful to go through this sort of normal way that it's presented of how to find a mixed strategy Nash equilibrium, which is to say that if there is a mixed strategy Nash equilibrium, then there are pure strategies that are represented, and the pure strategies that are represented have to have the same payoff against the Nash equilibrium strategy. Okay, so let me just do that here. So again, we have you have two strategies. Okay, so if you have two pure strategies that are represented in the Nash equilibrium. And so what I mean by that, okay, is this is sort of the kind of physics loose jargon that we use, which is just saying they occur in the Nash equilibrium strategy profile with positive probability. Okay, strictly positive probability. Then S played against, and we'll call the thing sigma star, okay, played again, and then we'll say Si played against sigma star minus I has the same payoff. As Si star played against sigma star minus I. Okay? And so, and again, this just follows when you do the proof. You say, well, suppose it not, then player I would just play the one that paid more. You see what I mean? Because that's the thing, is that there's no change that can improve the payoff. Okay, and so therefore this must be true. So let's then think about the matching pennies, and again, then it'll be more obvious why this has to happen. So I have this matching pennies business, and I say, well, okay, player one. Okay, let's look at player one. Okay, and so he has two strategies. There's heads and there's tails. Okay, and you say, what's the payoff for heads for player one? Okay, well, if pair one wants the things to be the same, right? He wants the pennies to match. So it's basically, you know, the payoff, okay, the payoff for heads is then equal to x2. This is the probability that player two played heads minus 1 minus x2, okay? And here you see that the payoff to player one just depends on what player pair two did, which is, again, really obvious when you're matching pennies, right? Whether heads is a winner depends on what the other guy did. And similarly, the payoff for tails is equal to minus x2 plus 1 minus x2, okay? And then you just set these things equal. Okay, so what you get is, what? I just did this now. We'll see if I did the algebra. So I have 2x2 minus 1 is equal to 1 minus 2. Is this going to work? 1 minus 2, right. And so now I have, this is good, 4x2 is equal to 2, and so x2 is equal to 1. Okay, and so that statement that... That's true. Oh, half. Oh, I thought I could do it, but no. Okay, yeah. Oh, SI prime. Okay. Great. Okay, great. So again, we're saying that if you look at the pure strategies that are represented, they have to have the same payoff against the mixed strategy. Okay? Because otherwise, the mixed strategy wouldn't be a Nash equilibrium. Okay, and so this other way of doing it is basically explicitly talking about what the other guys are doing and saying, in order for it to be a mixed Nash equilibrium, the other player has to be doing this. So again, you know, writing the equation for x1 for the first player gives you a condition on x2. And, you know, and more generally, if you had more players, writing the equation for x, the condition for x1 tells you about what everybody else is doing, 2 through n. X2 tells you 1, then 3 through n, et cetera. And then you just get a system of equations, and you solve the system. Now, you can also see in this way of doing things, like what happens when there is no mixed state Nash equilibrium, is that basically there are no two strategies for which you can get the same payoff. Okay, the easiest way to see that is you could take like a diagonal game, okay, and just have sort of A1 and A2 and A1 bigger than A2, right? You know, and then you say, okay, well, now I'm player one and I pick heads, right? Well, if the other guy picked heads, I get a payoff A1. If the other guy picked tails, I get a payoff zero. And if A1 is not equal to zero, those things can never be equal. And that's how you know that you've got a pure Nash equilibrium, because you can't solve this condition, okay? Okay. All right, so did that answer the questions at the end of the last hour? Okay, and this is all I was going to say about this fundamental theorem and things, because, again, you know, as physicists, we're perfectly happy just writing down a function and taking a derivative. So, but it's useful to think about it this way, because I think it does give some insight into why the equation's the way it is. Yeah.
So you would expect that, you know, the pure Nash state or the pure strategy is kind of a special case, but yeah. It actually is quite common because of the fact that most games are.
Well, because of these off-cycle things, yeah. But yeah, there are a bunch of games where there's one, yeah, I don't know, again, it's an analogy to life. Some people don't like, and some people do like. I like this analogy to life thing in terms of thinking about the games, but there are sometimes when, you know, clearly you know what the right thing to do is, independent of, you know, what, you know what I mean, that there's clearly a best plan. But then there are other times when, you know, depending on what other people do, you know, and that sort of encompasses us, right?
Kind of nice looking game, right? You have to have like matching pennies or rock paper scissors, like the matrix.
Well, no, I think that in some sense was why. Sorry, I interrupted you. I do that. Sorry, but I think in some sense that's why game theory went through a long fallow period, because when von Neumann was thinking about it, he was thinking about it in terms of, okay, we're going to do pure thought to come up with the best strategy. But I'd say that as the games get more complicated, then you are more and more likely to get this sort of mixed state happening, this mixed state thing happening. And that's the thing, as the games increase in complexity, then you're more likely to get a situation where, you know, depending on what everybody else does, there are, you know, the best thing isn't obvious. And again, matching pennies is really obvious, right? Because, you know, again, it's completely clear that what your best strategy is completely depends on what the other guy is doing. But as you have big dependencies, that becomes more common. Okay, and so sort of being able to understand the mixed state match equilibrium was important in terms of making progress.
So is the set of, like, games with pure Nash equilibria, like, is it like sort of close to an open set or close to a closed set?
Well, for the 2x2 games, there's a complete characterization. Actually, I'm going to do it. I'll do that sort of later. But what I'm going to do next is put talk about the evolutionary game theory. And it turns out that, you know, I think of, you know, putting dynamics on the system is the way to go. So basically, if the game is small enough. Yeah, there's a pretty, what happens is that basically, what happens if you have a two-player game, a symmetric two-person game, which, you know, player one has this matrix and player two has that matrix, but, you know, and you have things off the diagonal, okay? It turns out that for a 2x2 game, you can map it onto diagonal form, okay? And if you do that, then what happens is that if A1 and A2 have the same sign, there's one behavior, and again, I forget which case is which, okay? And if A1 and A2 have opposite signs, then that's actually prisoner's, it turns out that's the same as prisoner's dilemma, and then basically you just take the one with positive sign. And then one of them being zero is, you know, so basically each thing's an open set, and then there's a degenerate case that separates them. Okay, this is the easiest one to think about, but it turns out it's like legit for 2x2 symmetry. Okay, yeah.
Is the reason we didn't use the second condition from the fundamental theorem of Nash equilibria that we only add two strategies for each player, so there's no sense in which there's a third strategy that can somehow be better than?
Right. Well, let me put it to you a different way. So you don't really need to ever use the third condition because, let's just do this game. Again, let's just think about this guy. And this is a case where, in principle, there are two strategies, but Nash equilibrium, you know, let's say A1 is bigger than A2. Okay. Well, any schmuck can see without actually doing any calculation that you're just better off, you know, we'll call them heads and tails again. You're better off with heads, right? Everyone's going to do heads because everybody wins if they both do heads, right? So the point being, you can just go through the same rigmarole, okay, the same thing. All right, player one wants to find a mixed state Nash equilibrium. Player one says, okay, well, the payoff if player two plays heads is A1, and the payoff if player two plays tails is zero, and I want them to be equal. and it just doesn't work. There's no solution. And that's what tells you that one of those two strategies is not represented in the Nash equilibrium. Okay, so that's the point at which you use condition two. So you don't actually, you don't write an equation for condition two, but what happens is you try to solve, you basically write equations assuming everything's in the mixed state Nash equilibrium, and then you use equation two to eliminate the strategies for which you can't satisfy it. Okay, so, you know, and again, this is all just contained here, right? You know, where you're just maximizing this thing, you know, and so, you know, and again, I didn't actually do the maximum, but you can just work it through and verify its maximum. But that's where it comes in, is that if you can't satisfy the equation, it just means the strategy is not in the Nash equilibrium. So you know what to do. Yeah?
I would call it an MG problem.
Oh, okay. Well, this is, it turns out, okay, it's an NP problem when you ask how the difficulty of finding the scales with the number of players. So I only have two players. Okay, but when you do an internet auction, all right, then, you know, there's some huge set of potential customers who are bidding for the top line on the search results. Okay, so you ask, okay, well, I need to do this this type of calculation, but with many, many players. Okay, and what happens is you say, okay, now we want to specify the payoff matrix. Right? And if you enumerate the entire payoff matrix, the number of numbers you need to enumerate it grows exponentially with the size, with the number of players. And that's sort of clear, because you need, you know, player one does this, and player two does this, and player three does this. And so basically the number of entries you need in the payoff matrix is just, you know, the number of strategies up to the number per player up to the, raised to the power of the number of players. Okay. All right, and so that's clearly an exponential problem. Okay, so you know, and so that's not what Google does, because Google doesn't have, even Google does not have the computer resources to enumerate it. So what they do is that there's a compact form for the specification of the payoffs. Okay, and if you then ask the question, okay, suppose I have a compact representation of the payoffs that grows polynomially with the number of players, can I find the Nash equilibrium in a time that that grows polynomial with that polynomial specification? And that's what you can't do. Okay, so again, it's in when you're actually writing down the payoff matrix. I mean, you know, because look, you go through this, and then yes, if you have the payoff matrix enumerated, it's just solving linear equations, and so you can do that. Okay, but if you have many, many players, you're not going to have an explicit representation of the payoff matrix. So that's the sense in which it's intractable. Okay? All right. And again, in what I'm going to do, I'm not going to, you know, all the examples are these simple examples with two players and two strategies, or maybe three strategies, but that's it. Okay, so is this all clear? Okay, and okay, well then good, okay? All right, so are there any questions? Because now I'm going to go to the evolutionary game theory. Okay. Okay, and so again, game theory sort of went absolutely nowhere, I would say. And actually, I was talking to somebody yesterday who was sort of saying, well, actually, it sort of went backwards in some ways. So what happened was, you know, von Neumann did this, and he sort of cooked up game theory. And it was actually very popular. There was this sort of think tank called the RAND Corporation. And the guys who sort of figured out the prisoner's dilemma was a dilemma were two guys who worked for the RAND Corporation. And again, what they showed is that, you know, if you take prisoner's dilemma, you know, the optimum strategy is to, you know, just screw the other guy, right? And so this was taken as a justification that, you know, well, you should just screw the other guy as a general rule, because it's scientifically proven that it's the optimum strategy, right? And, you know, and it was sort of this intellectual justification for much Cold War bad policy. And, you know, and so that really gave game theory a really bad reputation. And it sort of sat there for a really long time. And the thing that actually revived it was the development of evolutionary game theory. Okay, and so the name that's most generally, the guy is generally credited with sort of developing this as a as an approach is a guy named Maynard Smith, who was a biologist. Okay, and so his idea was, again, he interpreted the games as fitness of organisms, and then basically said, well, really, what you've got is, don't think of these, you know, hyper rational. Well, and also the thing which in the 50s made it so that game theory went into ill repute was, you know, that again, von Neumann's picture of like the mechanism by which you reach the equilibrium was that you had these like super hyper rational people who all did, you know, figured out exactly what everybody else was going to do and then did the best thing for them, you know, consistent with this. And in practice, you know, this just didn't seem very realistic, okay? And so it was sort of like, again, there was a question someone said, where, you know, so it's like you could say you have a game of chess, right? And so the point is, within von Neumann's picture of chess, I mean, you would just say, you know, whatever. I mean, you wouldn't play because you would always draw, right? Because in principle, you can always draw or whatever, you know? And so you'd say, well, okay, well, no one would ever play chess because they know what the payoff is, okay? So, so what Maynard Smith did, again, is he viewed the Nash equilibrium as a result of an evolution process. And what that did is it meant you didn't need any intelligence to play the game. And this, as you know, is a big plus, right? And so the picture was you had these organisms, and they are, again, the motivation for, you know, just selfishly, you know, maximizing your own fitness is sort of, you know, clear, because you just have these bugs, and we can think of bacteria or whatnot, you know. And basically, what used to be a payoff, the utility, is now just a reproduction rate. That, you know, if you have a successful strategy, you make more bugs with that strategy. And if you have an unsuccessful strategy, you make fewer bugs with that strategy. And so there's no sense in which the bacteria are hyper-rational beings. It's just that either they make more bugs or they make fewer bugs, and that's all there is to it. And so what that meant is you didn't get into this question of, you know, how rational the actors are, and, you know, and there was a physically or biologically plausible process by which, you know, you would be able to investigate these questions. And in the meantime, I mean, you know, people have investigated, you know, games by looking at bugs. I mean, this is not there are actually experiments to do this. Okay, so but what I'm going to do first is not put the dynamics on yet. I may get to it at the end of today. If not, I'll get to it tomorrow. But first, I'm just going to talk about what it means to be evolutionarily stable. So there's evolutionary stability. Okay. And so this is the key difference between the optimization problem in evolutionary game theory and the optimization problem in the original game theory. And that is what von Neumann was worried about. Well, he really was focused on economics. And he said, if you have two different strategies that give you the same payoff, you don't care which one you use, because the only thing you care is the payoff. Okay? Whereas in evolutionary game theory, it's actually the strategy itself is what you're looking at the stability of. Okay, so Nash equilibrium are the payoffs the same, but evolutionary stability are the strategies. You know, does the strategy change? And so, in evolution, as you probably know, there's sort of these things called neutral mutations that are mutations that can happen and not change the fitness. Okay, and in order to be evolutionary stable, you're saying, well, we're saying that there are no neutral mutations either, that the actual strategy itself is stable. Okay, so it's a stronger condition. Okay, so evolutionary stability is a stronger condition than Nash equilibrium. Okay. And the reason why this is so important is because what can happen, and actually people have done, you know, this prisoner's dilemma thing with populations and memory and things like this. I mean, actually, it's a very heavily studied a game, and, you know, and what happens is that there, you know, all these there it's with memory, but it still illustrates the point. You have all these strategies, and you can have a strategy that, you know, is stable to invasion by a certain mutant strategy, which is what I'm going to talk about now, how you define that. But then, you know, if there's another strategy that's just as good, but, you know, not better, it can still go in there and sort of spread, okay? And it could be that that mutant, even though it had the same fitness, has a different susceptibility to a different mutant, okay? So if you ask the population, so it turns out it's actually relevant whether, you know, sort of the strategy set stays the same or whether the strategy set wanders around in terms of what the stability is to invasion by mutants, okay? So the whole thing depends on the strategies, okay? So, and again, this is Maynard Smith's definition, okay? And so now, we have, and what we're doing here is we're just looking at, you know, sort of a two-person game, okay? But again, what we've got here is we have a population of organisms, okay? And they play this game, and the fitness of the organism depends on the result of the game, okay? And so we have a fitness for the first guy, which is U1. Okay, and then we have, we'll say the fitness UJ of S, okay. Okay, so, and again, this is where the lack of vectors is a little confusing, because this is just basically, this is the fitness of the jth guy, and then it depends on all the strategies, okay? So, S is, again, a strategy vector, or a mixed strategy profile, if that turns out to be relevant, okay? But let's think of it as a mixed strategy profile. Okay, it is evolutionarily stable. If UJ S epsilon T plus 1 minus epsilon S is greater than U1 T epsilon T plus 1 minus epsilon S. Okay. So that's the condition. Okay, so now let me tell you what the condition means. All right. So again, S is the strategy that you're checking is evolutionarily stable. Okay? And T is like any. So the point is that's for any set of plausible T's, okay? T is your mutant strategy, okay? And again, this is a local stability condition. So epsilon is, you know, for small enough epsilon kind of thing happening. So what you do is you take your original population, okay? And now what you're going to do is you're going to add a small number of mutants to it. So epsilon T plus 1 minus epsilon S is, I've mostly S, but I've added a little bit of T to it. Okay? And so now this is sort of explicitly a mixed strategy. All right? And so now what you're going to do is we're going to look at the two subpopulations in the mixed strategy and say, okay, given that this is the population that we're talking about, is it better to be an S or is it better to be a T? Okay, am I better off where I was or do I want to switch to the new strategy? Okay, so this is the fitness of the original strategy with the new population with a few mutants in it. And that has to be bigger than the fitness of the original, of the mutant strategy in the population that exists. Okay, because if the fitness of the mutant strategy is higher, well, then the mutants will reproduce faster, and the mutants will start taking over, okay? But if you put in a few mutants and the host organisms have a more successful strategy, then the mutant will not be able to invade. And again, when we put on dynamics, this will turn out to be true, but it's sort of, again, this is a, you know, this is sort of this thing where we're taking the, you know, we find sort of a, we're just looking at local stability of the equilibrium, but when you do, we'll put dynamics on later. But sort of intuitively, it's clear that why this is, you know, why this is going to happen. So I'm giving you dynamical motivation for it, even though this is a purely static statement about fitnesses of different strategies, okay? I haven't put the dynamics on yet. Okay, so again, the idea is if I put some mutants in, then I look in that population and ask, is it better off, am I better off with my original strategy, or do I want to switch, or do the mutants do better? Okay, and if the mutants do better, then they earn more, and then it's not stable. Okay, and again, the statement of, well, it's not stable will be defined once the dynamics go on. Okay, so this is equivalent to a different definition, which is sometimes easier to implement. So in the example, I use this one. So again, I have, so I'm just going to say, so for most of them, I'm going to say it's just going to be symmetric games where everybody, all the organisms are the same type of organism, and the fitness, of, you know, there isn't a different fitness function for different organisms. So I only need to specify U1, right, because all the U's are the same, right? Okay, so. So let me just do U1, and so the fitness function is that there are is equivalent to the following two conditions holding. Okay, so U1 of T and S is less than or equal U1 of S and S. Okay, and U1 of T and S equals U1 of S and S implies that U1 of T and T is less than U1 of S and S. Okay, so again, this is like, what is the condition for stability? And again, the first thing is that there are two options. Okay, you have the equilibrium strategy, and now you're looking at the fitness of a brand of a possible variation. So one possibility is that the new possibility has a lower fitness. Now, if it's a lower fitness, then you know clearly it's not going to invade. Okay, but the other possibility is that it has the same fitness. Okay, that the possible invasion strategy has the same fitness as the original strategy. But if that happens, then basically, you know, the things playing against, you know, so if it's playing against the host strategy, it gets the same payoff. But every once in a while, the things will run into themselves. Okay, so then the thing is, am I better off being in the original strategy when I play against a mutant, or if I'm, you know, or am I better off being a mutant playing against a mutant? If I'm better off being the host strategy, that's enough to make the mutant population go down. Okay. Now the reason this is so important is this fundamental theorem of mixed state Nash equilibria, right? Because if you start with the mixed state Nash equilibria, that fundamental theorem tells you that there are a lot of strategies that will have the same payoff against the Nash equilibrium strategy, right? Anything that has support on the same strategies that are in the Nash state equilibrium, any proportion will have the same payoff, okay? So it turns out this is the crucial condition in mixed state Nash equilibrium, is that this is the one that you can check. And sometimes it's true, and sometimes it's not true. Okay, I'm going to do a case here on the board where it is true, where the Nash mixed state Nash equilibrium is evolutionarily stable, but there's a case. I think in your homework I make you do a case where it's not. Okay. I think I asked you in your homework to determine whether it was or not. Well, anyway, you know the right answer. Anyway, so it's okay. You can find it all on the internet anyhow. So you have to work it out. Okay, and so these are equivalents, okay, and you can sort of see that. And essentially it follows from, don't forget these payoff functions are linear in the linearity of the payoff. So then you have to do it properly, but again, you can, it's sort of plausible and intuitively plausible, and if you just sort of define everything and use linearity appropriately, you can show these are equivalent, okay. So, but this is how I'm going to proceed. Okay, so now I do an example. Okay, so now, again, I'm going to do another two-by-two, two-player, two-by-two game. You know, two players, each with two strategies. Okay, and this game, and you know, and partly it's just that it turns out there are only three different games of symmetric two-by-two games. And so by making the examples be different things, you'll actually have gone, you know, this is the last one of the two-by-two games. Okay. You know, but again, why that is so, I'll do a little later. Okay, so the picture of the hawk-dove game is, well, actually, I'll write the payoff matrix. Okay. So the hawk is the fighter, and the dove is the yielder. Okay, so here's player one. All right, and here is player two. Okay. Okay. So this again is one of the very few, the three examples of the of a 2x2 symmetric game. Okay. How do you know it's symmetric? Again, so the diagonal elements have to be the same, all right? And then this has to be the transpose of that. Okay. And again, that's a statement that you know, so if this guy fights and this guy yields, then the first guy gets 4 and the second guy gets 0. If this guy fights and this guy yields, then the second guy gets 4 and the first guy gets 0. So again, the condition is that this is the transpose of that. So it's a two-player symmetric game. Okay, and so basically, here's sort of, this is an example. Again, I plugged in numbers here just because I did. But here you can view the payoffs this way, okay? So the point is that if you are a hawk and you come up to another player and the hawks always fight, okay? And so again, this is one where we're viewing it in an evolutionary way, where you have a population of birds. And you have some that are hawks and some that are doves. And the doves always yield, and the hawks always fight. Okay, so if a hawk hits a dove, then the hawk gets ready to fight. The dove yields, and the hawk eats all the dove's food. Okay, so the hawk gets 4, and the dove gets nothing. Okay, so here we go. So we have strategy one, and this is the more general thing. Strategy one is fight. Strategy two is yield, okay? So if we have one versus two, then player one gets V, okay? And V is positive, okay? And player two gets 0, okay? Because the dove gives up, okay? All right, so but if the hawks fight, then they sort of tear each other to bits, and that's, you know, they both pay. Okay, so one versus one, Okay, so if they fight, one wins and one loses. Okay, and if they win, they get V, and if they lose, they get minus C. C is what you get if you lose a fight. V is what you get if you win a fight. So if the hawk plays dove, the hawk always wins and always gets V, and the dove always loses and pays C. Okay, so if when played against itself, then the strategy gives payoff V with probability half, minus C, also with probability half. Okay, so again, this is just showing you can do it with general numbers. Okay, and so this is a payoff of strategy one against itself, and then if two versus two, basically everybody gets V over two. Okay, all right, and so then you want to be in a situation, I think, where, you know, there's some condition on the V's and the C's, which I forgot to write down. I think it is that V has to be bigger than C. Okay, if V is bigger than C, then you get a hawk. C needs to be bigger than V, because you need them. You need to have fighting be less good than yield it. Okay. But the point is, again, now it's a situation where you could look at this thing, and if you're the first guy, all right, if you're the first guy and you say, well, all right, well, if the if I'm playing a hawk, I'm better off yielding, but if I'm playing a dove, I'm better off fighting. Okay, and so you know, there's what I'm doing here is I'm looking for pure Nash equilibrium. Okay, so there's this guy and then this guy, and now we go the other way. If the first guy fights, and let's see, wait a second. If this guy fights, I'm better off yielding. Okay, so if this guy fights, I'm getting a pure Nash equilibrium, which is really unfortunate. Minus one. Oh, wait. Oh, right, wait. I don't know why I'm having problems here. Oh, if this guy fights, I'm better off yielding. If this guy yields, better off fighting. Okay, if this guy fights, because I have having here where this is a pure Nash equilibrium. But I have a mixed Nash equilibrium here. So let me find them. Let me just find the mixed Nash equilibrium, and I'll see what I did wrong. Okay, because then I say, oh well, then this guy's done. Because this guy. Did I do something to the matrix? No. Let me just do the mixed Nash. I'm doing something which I don't know what it is. Let me find the mixed Nash equilibrium for this game, because basically what happens is that if you have all doves, then I'll tell you why there has to be a mixed state equilibrium here. If I start with all doves, okay, then what happens is a population of hawks that comes in is basically never going to hit another hawk. Going to hit a dove, okay? And so therefore, a hawk that comes in will have higher fitness, right? Because he's almost guaranteed to come up against the dove. And if you come up against the dove, then fighting is always a winning strategy. Yeah? Well, I'm getting a pure state Nash equilibrium right here. Because I say, well, wait. Because between this... Oh, wait, this is the first guy. Wait a minute. Okay, if the first guy picks a strategy, okay, then I look at this one and this one. Ah, this is what's wrong. It's this guy. It's the first guy picked a strategy. No, wait a minute. This is the thing I did last time, and I'm not doing it right. I said, oh, I can do it because I did it last time. All right. If the first guy picks a strategy, okay, then now... that means that he's going to fight. Oh, right. Oh, I just did it wrong. Okay, I got it now. Okay, first guy fights. Now I'm the second guy. See, what I did is I did the wrong maximization. First guy fights. Now I'm the second guy. All right, and I have a choice of fighting or yielding. Well, if I fight, I get a payoff. I hit this one instead of that one. That's where I went wrong. Okay. First guy fights. So I have a choice. I can fight or yield. If I fight, I get payoff minus one. If I yield, I get payoff zero. So I yield, okay? Because I'm just doing the best given what the first guy did, okay? So now the first guy yields, okay? And if the first guy yields, am I better off fighting or yielding? And if I fight, I get four. And if I yield, I get two. And so I fight because I get more, right? Okay, so now I'm the first guy, and the second guy has decided to... still not happening for me. So the first guy decided to fight. What am I doing wrong? Oh, the second guy decided to fight. Yeah, but I'm getting fight yield is still better than fight. But then, see, doesn't this look like this is a pure state Nash equilibrium? Oh, because there are two. Because this one's also good. That's the point. There are two equally good strategies. Right. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. So I was doing it right all this time. Okay. The point being is that now I've got two strategies in the two pure strategies with the same payoff explicitly, right? That either first guy fights and the second guy yields, or I'm sorry. I was just having like a mental block. Or the second guy fights and the first guy yields. But it's the same population. This is why you have to have a mixed state Nash equilibrium, right? Because I just have some population of birds, and they're randomly coupled. And so the one says, oh, okay, well, I want to have half fighting and half yielding. But it's the same population, and I'm pulling out randomly. And so if you have a population of fighters and yielders together some fraction of the time, this is why it's later in the book. It's more confusing. So fraction of the time, the fighters are going to fight against themselves, and the yielders are going to fight against themselves. So, you know, so what happens is that, you know, it's not completely clear what the right combination of birds is. So, you know, because again, if you have all hawks, the hawks will all fight against each other, and that's bad. They all get lousy payoffs. If you have all doves, they get a little bit, but then one hawk will come in and just, you know, get a much higher payoff. Okay, so the first thing you have to do, you're looking confused? Sorry? Okay. So the first thing you have to do is you have to figure out what the Nash equilibrium is. Okay. And again, there's the, you know, and again it's sort of not clear from this little game. And so now what I'm gonna do is just do what I did before. Okay, so everything is the same as before in terms of finding the Nash equilibrium. Okay. So let's find the expected payoffs. Okay, so the expected payoff for one is x2. Okay, again, okay, x1 is equal to the probability that the hawk, with the probability that, or let's just call it the fraction, how do I want to say this? Right. I mean, it turns out that we think of having two populations of birds, okay? And you take one from population one, one from population two. So that you say what you're looking at is you're looking at the fraction of population one that is a hawk. So x1 is the fraction of the first population that is a hawk, and x2 is the fraction of population two that is a hawk. Okay, all right. So what you're doing is you're saying, well, what if you pick a bird randomly out of the first population, all right, and the populations have this fraction, what's the payoff? Okay, so we do the matrix. Okay, so I'm looking at, again, player one. So it's minus one, x1, x2. All right, and then it's plus four if you're in this one, plus four x1, one minus x2. Okay, again, this is first one's a hawk, second one's a hawk, this one's a hawk, this one's a dove. Okay, and then there's a zero, which is if you have the first one's a dove and the second one's a hawk, plus two, one minus x1, one minus x2. Okay, so that's the first one, and then you simplify it, and you get minus 3 x1, x2, plus 2 x1, minus 2 x2, plus 2. Okay, so again, in the same way, but the image is that you have two populations, and there's one from column A and one from column B, okay? And then you do a similar calculation for the second population, and when you work it out, the the result is this. Okay. Again, you get, you know, minus one if they're both hawks and doves. So the payoff to player two is the same. This payoff just is x2, one minus x1, and so that's why it comes out that way. Okay. All right. So if you have an evolutionarily stable equilibrium, it must be a Nash equilibrium. Okay, so that's the first result, that not every Nash equilibrium is evolutionarily stable, but you cannot, if you have an evolutionarily stable equilibrium, it must be Nash, okay? And the reason is simple, right? Because the Nash says, I can't do better, right? You know, my payoff is optimum. My fitness is as good as it, you know. There's no one population that can improve its fitness by changing strategy, Okay, so it means that Nash equilibrium is a necessary condition for evolutionary stability, all right? So if you want to find an evolutionarily stable equilibrium, step one is you find the Nash equilibrium, and then step two is you see whether it's evolutionarily stable. Yeah?
How do we know it's not a local maxima? And it might be a very, very small local maxima of the fitness, in which case changing the strategy will not make things better, but there might be another, a completely different way to optimize.
Okay, so again, you only know if it's locally stable, and that's explicit in the definition, because again, we said, oh, okay, we've got our strategy, and we're looking at putting in like a teeny tiny fraction of mutants, okay? So that's absolutely always a consideration here, that you can have a local maximum and have it not be the global maximum. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, and that is one of the great mysteries of evolution at some level is, you know, like, you know, and because don't forget, there's no mutation here. So you would say, well, how do you know, because then this question of, well, how do you get out of the local maximum, all right? And the answer is, you know, something else has to happen, right? Okay, but we're not doing something else has to happen. We're just looking at the local maximum. But that's exactly right, that in this, in some sense, the study of, like, you know, well, you get stuck and it's not the global maximum, and how do you get to the right one and things like, that's exactly why it's non-trivial. Okay, so, but this one, again, there's no, this one, if you hit a local maximum, there's no way to get out to the global maximum. Okay, but that's generally true. I mean, so, and again, if you think about having lots and lots of, you know, a game with lots and lots of players, then, you know, showing that a Nash equilibrium is a global optimum is, again, known to be NP complete. I'm sorry, I'm over. So, okay, so I will pick up exactly here tomorrow. Okay, and again, I went slower than I thought, but okay, we'll be good. Okay, yeah, and I'm sorry about my confusion, but I was actually doing it right. I'd forgotten that. This one has two pure Nash equilibria that are degenerate. And so clearly, you know, this question of, well, is there an evolutionarily stable equilibrium is important. Okay?